Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English day.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we have an additional star today.
Yes.
Because I'm into astronomy, it's really big. We have the famous, maybe infamous, James Harrison, who is at the Bell County Expo
Center
someplace. He's at the big dome, the flying saucer.
That's it.
And he's doing something really important. And he wants to tell us about it. So, James, you have the saucer.
Hey, it's an honor for me to be on your show. How many years have y'all been doing this on KTEM?
We were trying to figure it out, and we noticed that here at KTEM, they were using stone tools when we started.
Right. 17 years.
17 years, and what do you get?
I think I've been there that long. I mean, at least I know what you're talking about. Broadcasting's come a long way since the Stone Age.
It's come all the way, in your case, I think, from Copper's Cove, hasn't it?
Yeah, when we
first started,
we were broadcasting by Yodel.
Yes. And then KOOV was alive and well in Copper's Cove.
That's back when we used 210 cans with a string.
Yes. Right.
Oh, it's great. It's an honor to be on your show. I am at the Bell County Expo Center. It is the 2015 Home and Garden Expo and Classic Car Show, sponsored by the Temple Area Builders Association. We're tickled to death.
Is that in NASA? Now that's where they put the rockets together.
In the assembly building.
In the assembly building.
Yeah.
So, do you suppose that they're assembling something in there?
They could be.
All right.
They're assembling an exposition.
Wow. Well, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. If that's kind of a self-redundant statement. I mean, by definition, if people weren't listening to it, they wouldn't hear me say that. So,
yeah, if you're listening right now, is a redundant statement.
Right. But if you can hear our voices, then you're listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, which is a radio presentation program. What else would you call it? A show. It's not a show. It's a tell.
Definitely a tell.
Which means if we're gambling, we're in trouble, right?
You've got lots of tells.
Right. Okay. And the Personal Wealth Coach is not only a radio presentation done each Saturday morning, more or less, when we're in the mood to do it. It is also an investment advisory firm based in Salado, Texas. We're not in Salado. People say, where are you? And they'll tell me sometimes, you know, like if I meet somebody in Temple and they say, where are you? I always say, I'm in Temple. And they go, oh, your office is in Temple. No, I'm in Temple. A lot of times I ask people, where are you? And they will tell me, like,
yeah,
I'm in Austin.
No,
and I look at them and go, you're in Salado.
Yeah.
People get very confused about that. But at any rate, our offices are located in Salado, and we are regulated by the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, and that's who you can complain to if you want to complain about something.
It's who we complain to, that's for sure.
You got it. And the telephone numbers to call in here if you would like to be on the air with us and issue comments, questions, complaints, or anything else. If this is the 21st of February, and it is also 2015, then you're certainly welcome to give us a call at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Well, now what do we do?
I've got something to jump right into here.
Okay, jump.
I have had lots of questions about Greece this week. Lots and lots and lots of questions about Greece.
You know, there was a plumber that was telling me about grease this time of year.
Yeah, you don't want to put bacon grease in your plumbing.
Or turkey grease. Yeah, because it will foul up. And I really understood right from the beginning, this was the issue with grease.
Yeah, they just messed up their plumbing.
It messes up the Eurozone's plumbing.
But the specific questions that I was getting this week were actually pretty good. And I realize that the people say there's no bad question. And sometimes it's the same question that I get asked all the time. This week I've been getting lots of unique questions, so this gets me excited. People were asking, so what's the big deal? What happens if Greece defaults on their debt? And let me give some background in here for those of you that have not been following the financial news for the past 4 years or so. Greece is a basket case. The country
it's
of
a
Greece,
slimy basket case that is going rancid.
Right. The country of Greece is really in a lot of trouble financially. They have way too much debt and not enough revenue. Their GDP is low and their debt load is high. They have about a 180% national debt to GDP. So that means that in any given year, the entire income of the country. Everything that they make is not enough, even if they did nothing else, to pay off the debt unless they did it for a year and 0.8. And that means that it is very difficult to sustain.
So the debt level, it's the debt payments, then, you're saying, are 180%?
No, the debt itself is 180% of GDP.
Yeah, but, okay.
Okay.
Right.
So if they went to pay the debt, if they wanted to pay it all off, so if you're saying, like, the if you're refinancing
right,
your
right,
house,
okay.
you want to pay it off, the payoff amount is almost two whole times their entire income. That's the gross that everybody's making, not what the government makes as revenue.
So it's about the same as Japan's.
Right.
Okay.
Here's the difference, though.
Ah, now we get into the greasy part.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting facets here. I'm just laying in the groundwork before I can even get to the question. Because the difference is that when they went to the European Union and they said, we need help, the European Union said, okay, but if we're going to loan you money, it's really Germany. So just imagine a German accent whenever I say European Union. If we're going to loan you this money, well, you have these criteria you have to meet. You have to cut your government spending drastically. You have to raise taxes, and you have to put in enforcement on that taxes, on those tax, the tax collection. So since they've done that, their overall debt level has dropped, but their GDP has dropped faster. So their income, their GDP has dropped 25%.
Yes. When you talk about a low GDP, we're also talking here about a shrinking GDP.
Right. So if you think back to the Great Recession, the times of horror in our minds, what was the lowest GDP drop that we saw?
Not a bunch.
No, it never went down to more than, I mean, basically we had a 4% total drop, and it was very short term.
Mm-hmm.
Greece has had a 25% drop, and that started in 2008.
Mm-hmm. And then you throw in the fact that they have about a 35 or 40% unemployment rate. And only about 20% of the people are paying taxes.
Yes, it's about a 35% unemployment rate, and their young person unemployment rate is 50%.
Right.
If you look at the overall Eurozone, which is not to be confused with the European Union, the Eurozone, just where they use the currency.
Not to be confused with the European Union. Right.
The Eurozone unemployment rate is 11.5%, which is, if you think about us being in the fives and them being in the 11s.
That should tell you a lot.
That's
right,
a big
there.
Deal. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to Greece, it's more than double that. So I realize we have a call. I'm going to get to this real quick. Let's hit the call, and then we'll come back to Greece.
Okay, caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Enjoy the show. I read in the paper that next year they're going to change the way money market funds are. Not rated, but, you know, they used to have a flat dollar fee, and now I guess they're going to let them float. Why are they going to do that?
Okay.
What's going to be the changes? Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We'll get to that in just a second.
Yeah. Let me finish up with Greece, and then we'll hit the terminology in the industry is breaking the dollar, which is it's kind of a scary label for something that's not scary at all. Okay. So back to Greece. Greece just had an election, and a new government has taken over their parliament. And when the Europeans have an election, it's very different than when we have an election. When we have an election, we have a two-party system generally. There are other parties, but they don't really amount to much as far as the overall political system goes. In Greece, a 34% was the majority.
Well, they have a two-party system, too. They just have a two-two-party system.
Two-two-party.
There's actually 22 parties
right.
competing.
Yes. So as a 34% majority, they were then able to form a coalition with these other parties mm-hmm. that would agree with them to get kind of close, just over a majority, and then they had a prime minister.
And did you notice the two parties that make up, that allow them to get to a majority? One of them is an extreme right-wing party,
right.
and the other one is an extreme, it's the communists. and the sort of almost neo-fascist Greek needs to go it on its own.
Right. Yeah, those are the ones that are supporting this particular prime minister, and he ran on the platform of renegotiating the debt, getting rid of austerity, and basically just saying no to the European Union. Well, over the weekend, or over this week, they had lots of negotiations, and the Europeans left the table and then came back, and you've got this thing where that says this weekend, from the agreement, they've got to come up with a bunch of stipulations to give back to the European Union or the European Eurozone's their finance ministers to agree upon. Basically, what he has done is he has broken his promises that he made in going up. But the questions that I got were, what happens if they default? What happens if they can't pay the debt? And this is where you get into the world of weirdness. Because when a person defaults on their debt, they just can't get more debt. And that's one of the problems that happens with a country as
well.
That
was the previous show.
Right. It's a form of bankruptcy. It's
mm-hmm.
default.
Right.
It's when you're not able to pay your debts.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it difficult to get more money to pay for things if you still need to get debt to pay for your
mm-hmm.
ongoing government stuff. What's happened with Greece is that they're right on the edge of default. And if they default, one, they won't get debt. But two, their banks won't be trusted by the people that live in Greece, because the bank's money can be confiscated by the Greek government, as they've shown in the past. So there's this very rapid removal of euros from the Greek banks right now. That causes no new jobs. And when you already have a 25% unemployment rate, that unemployment rate just continues to climb. So they don't want to default on this, and we have James Harrison calling in. So
the transition to James Harrison is they don't want to default on this.
Yes, we don't want to default on the Greek debt, so James Harrison is on the phone.
Right. Go ahead, Jim.
Thank you, guys. I mean, I enjoy listening to your show like I do every week when I'm in town today. It's an honor for me to be part of it. And we're live at the Bell County Expo Center. It is the Home and Garden Show.
And that you know, they're in the exhibition building, not the assembly building.
Right.
That's good because, you know, building rocket ships while a home and garden show is going on can be difficult.
Very dangerous.
Yes, okay.
Real quick back to Greece. I realize we've got a shortened schedule this program because mm-hmm. of the remote. So let me real quick wrap this up. The other aspect of what happens when a government defaults on debt is very apparent if you look at the country of Iceland. Iceland has a population of just over 200,000 people, which is roughly the size of Bell County. So 200,000 people, and during the boom years, hedge funds were dumping money in there at about $20 billion a year. And if you divide $20 billion by 200,000 people, you start to understand that this may have been an overinflated economy.
May have been.
May have been.
I'm not
a little
sure, but yeah, may have been.
Well, back in 2008 and 2009, they had been making, before that, they'd been making a lot of decisions in the government of Iceland on how, you know, the programs that they were going to run, and basically they made all their decisions based on all this money flowing in. Well, when the money stopped flowing in, they had a lot of debts that they needed to pay, and they wound up defaulting. And Iceland went from a country that was the new center of finance for Europe. It was a place where banks were, and people had, over the last decade and a half, left the old school jobs of fishing and trapping and that sort of thing. They'd spent a lot of money making their power system better, the electric system better. Well, they went back to patching the boats and going out and fishing. Basically, if they had not spent the money to make their electrical infrastructure work, they would not have had power. They would have been dark ages. So they're out there fishing now, and they're slowly recovering. But the mountain of debt that they defaulted on is still there, and it won't go away until they pay it off, which means it's very difficult for Iceland as a government to get new debt from the rest of the world.
They should actually contact Ed Laughlin.
Yeah, bankruptcy.
Yeah, they went bankrupt.
There are no laws. There are no international laws on bankruptcy.
Well, he could probably negotiate one.
Mediation. He was talking about that in the interview.
He should get in there. They did have a mediation, by the way.
So, yeah.
And the mediation, if you're dealing with the big banks and you don't have a bankruptcy law,
right.
The mediation is,
you do what we say.
You pay off the debt.
Right. And what Greece is doing right now is the big stick. There are several of them, and Greece doesn't hold them. The European Union and the Eurozone hold the big sticks. And basically what they're saying is, if you don't pay off the debt, we're not going to allow your country to use our currency, which means you're going to have to go back to the drachma. And if they go back to the drachma, which is the currency prior to the euro in Greece, they won't be able to use it for much of anything, because when the government breaks its word to other governments, what's the likelihood of it keeping its word to its citizens? Very low, which causes the currency to be almost worthless, which means the people of Greece will want to use euros or dollars, and that's a really bad thing. And that's what's going on here, because if they leave the zone, some people consider that the easy way out. Well, it's only easy as a way out if you don't consider the repercussions that are going to happen for the next two decades in the country of Greece. They will not be able to climb out of this easily. The fear is that Cyprus and Portugal and Spain being the big one, might follow. I don't think that's going to happen because it is such a nasty pill to take.
Well, there's a problem. Additionally, with them defaulting, which is why the Germans gave in at the last moment and gave them 4 months. Basically, only gave them a 4 months reprieve.
No, they didn't. They gave them a weekend reprieve to get a four-month reprieve.
But even if I think they will by the end of the weekend. They're going to give them 4 months. The issue is, if Greece were to default, and leave the Eurozone, it would put Greece into... Well, they're already in, by our definition, a depression.
Right.
But it would put them in a depression of depressions. The government would not be able to pay anybody to do anything, and it would start deteriorating pretty quickly. It's kind of like, very frankly, it's very much like having, and this is about the relationship, your little finger still attached to your body physically.
Right.
But you got a tourniquet on it. And so it's dying, and it's going to rot, and you're going to get gangrene. The gangrene will spread through the rest of the body.
Right.
And I don't know anyone who's used that analogy except me, but here's the problem.
Most people don't talk about rotting flesh when they're talking about finances, but that's a pretty good analogy.
We have a country named Greece. Where do you go from there? the border... It's not going to leave the European Union.
No, and that means that the immigration or exigration
The only reason that people from Syria don't pour into Greece by the gazillions across the Adriatic Sea...
And Syria is not a very safe place right now.
...is because the Greek armed forces stop them.
The Greek armed forces are paid by the same people that would be defaulting.
And they're paid in euros. And if the Greek government basically goes kerplunk, we'll be in a really interesting position of Greece being a failed state, where the extremists can just have a ball. They'll have no police. They'll have no... they won't have anybody to collect the garbage.
Now, this is not a threat that Greece can use lightly, because for... Greece, it will be a really bad situation. For the rest of Europe, it will be a nasty situation, but Greece is just not in a good shape.
The Greeks, I want to keep wanting to say the Soviet Union. The Russians have offered to come to the aid, as if the Russians have a lot of excess money.
Right.
They've offered to come to the aid of Greece if they get kicked out. And so what you, and I'm going to say this is going to be talking about one of the top 10 weird things in the history of the world. Greece could become a satellite of Russia. Greece could become a failed state. And if it becomes a failed state, you will have, first off, a phenomenal number of people, this is already happening, by the way, leaving Greece, going into the rest of Europe without jobs, and in many cases not speaking local languages.
Coming with the habit of not paying taxes.
Right. And you will have people pouring in from Syria. And you will basically, if Russia steps in and says, we'll pay your armed forces in rubles,
And you have a Russian military in Europe.
Yeah. And the nightmare scenarios, there's lots of them. The problem comes down to something very simple. By the way, Mississippi is our Greece.
Except that Russia wouldn't be able to fund their military.
Right.
They don't have one.
But Mississippi doesn't have its own currency. And it is a state under a federal system with a constitution. So it's just kind of a given that in the United States of America, the federal government pours lots of money into Mississippi every year so that Mississippi doesn't go kerplunk and become a failed state.
And in the process, we don't put in a bunch of arbitrary guidelines that if you read almost any economics book are the textbook way to make an economy fail,
right?
Which is what the European Union is doing
mm-hmm.
to Greece.
Minus a constitution and a federal government. I said this when the European Union was formed, and I realized that was a long time ago. I've continued to say it when the Eurozone popped up. It's going to fail. And either they're going to go to a federal state or they're going to fail. And they probably will do both. They'll fail and then go to a federal state.
Right. You know, because you really need a crisis to kick the rest of the European Union over into saying, oh, we kind of do need a constitution, don't
Actually,
we?
Actually, what we need is for Russia to invade.
Yeah, that would do it.
And that will be the crisis they need to kick them into. It's basically
a painful way of learning, though.
Well, that's how we did it. The British
is how we did it.
British did not recognize the Confederation of States that was the United States of America, the Continental Congress. They didn't recognize all that and said, okay, as soon as we're done fighting France over here, we're going to come back and get you.
And they did.
And they tried in 1812, but by 1812.
Burned down the Capitol.
Right, but by 1812, at least we had a constitution.
Yeah.
And we were able to respond. We were able to provide a united response. And in essence, won.
Yeah, and what Russia is worried about now is not the European Union, it's NATO. Because many members of the European Union are part of NATO. But NATO has a defining document, a document with rules that say you must spend 2% of your GDP on defense. You must come to the aid of the other countries in NATO. These are things that are written in paper and signed with really big signatures. That it does not exist for the European Union.
Well, we are going to have to break for commercials, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
Are you paying too much for term life?
James Harrison at the Expo Center. Go ahead, James.
Thank you very much.
And we're back with the Personal Wealth Coach, and James Harrison remains at the Expo Center. And so, okay, here we are, and we were talking about Greece. Greece is not going to go away as a problem.
No. And this kind of fits nicely into, I think, what you were going to talk about with Russia. We already began with that. But Europe has got a couple of major crises going right now. Ukraine and Greece, one's financial, one is military. And I'm going to hand it off to you for that.
For those of you who are aware of the fact, well, by the way, while we're at it, the markets, the major indices in the market, the S&P 500, Dow Jones Industrial Average, and the Russell 2000, which is small companies, all hit records on Friday.
NASDAQ's right at the record.
I was going to get to that. Because Greece got a weekend reprieve.
right.
And the bottom line to it is the signal sent by the Germans was we are not willing to let Greece fail.
Right.
After saying to the world, we're going to let Greece fail. And I'm going to stay with Greece just a second. Greece is incapable of not failing at this point. And anybody who thinks otherwise is out of their mind.
It's already failed. This is something that people don't understand. This whole loan structure that was set up at the beginning
mm-hmm.
had default as an assumption. There were a lot of people that did not get paid when the Europeans came in and gave a loan to Greece. Greece just said, I'm not going to pay these people.
The issue here is that the Germans are imposing, and man, are they right-wing, they are imposing a requirement for austerity. And in the easiest way to look at this is what we have going on out there is effectively a sequester program. They are ordering Greece to sequester money and not spend it.
Right.
And the Greece, the problem in Greece is it's just, it's not going to work, and it's making the situation steadily worse. And by the way, it's exactly what Congress did between 1929 and 1934.
It's a really, really bad idea. It leads to depression.
And I hate to break it this way, but we're facing the same decision this year.
Yeah, we are.
And
we face the same decision every year.
At the end of the fiscal year this year, on October 1st, the federal government faces sequester again. And it faces a massive, if Congress does not find some way to provide more money or borrow more money. In other words, we either have to raise taxes or raise debt, which a lot of people are against. We will have a massive cut to defense, a massive cut to domestic spending, to the point that it will take at least 1% off of the gross domestic product of the United States, and that's a very conservative estimate, which will lower our tax revenues in the United States dramatically,
which will cause us
to be more in debt. Well, actually, it won't necessarily put the government more in debt, but it'll slow the economy down dramatically, lowering tax revenues, which means that the sequester on the following year will be worse.
Yeah.
Now, I want to point out, as Lynn Woolley said, the sequester was the Obama administration's idea, but it's been thoroughly embraced. Yes, it was. That's in the Wall Street Journal today. It was their idea, but it has been thoroughly embraced by the Republicans in the House of Representatives, where they're using it.
That's what I mean. It may have been his idea, but the Republicans in the House of Representatives had the majority when the president had the idea, and they passed it.
But I wanted to point that out. But the other thing is, if they go for it, they're going to get the blame, and that's going to be an interesting thing. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hello, how y'all doing?
Good.
I got a question for you. On sequestration, it seems like, how can it be on doing the both things? How can it make the economy going to go, as I said, Putin had an announcement the other day. He said that, how everything's real good. And isn't that a little bit due to sequestration?
No.
At the same time?
No.
No,
sequestration, the last time the Congress went for sequestration, you look back in 2011, you will note that the stock market dropped into a full-fledged correction. The GDP dropped that quarter significantly. Basically, the government spends money in the economy, and it spends money that's pretty necessary to the economy. If you chop what the government spends, there's a lot of people who then just don't show up for work.
Well, I'll give you an example. This is an easy one.
And they don't get paid.
If you work at the Coast Guard and you're out there patrolling and keeping smuggling down and making sure that immigration isn't being violated and making sure that the trade paths are clear, and you get non-paid days off because there's not money to spend,
and the cutters can't go out and the patrollers can't patrol,
those are all government jobs, though, right?
And sequester will shut those down.
That's what happens, and then that's what happened. We had furloughs for the Coast Guard, and that caused people to be in danger in storms. It caused trade to be more dangerous. It caused, there's certain aspects that governments are supposed to do.
And half of the sequester hits the Defense Department, which is already causing them to pull back and not get equipment they need. And
right at the time when Russia is flexing its muscles.
I heard on his that Democrat deal that he had the other day that he sounded like a lot of things are going well, but, at the same time, as just an individual out here, it still seems like, ever since, I remember when Bush way back then, I hadn't had a raise in all 100 years, it still almost like the same, so I'm not really sure how things are getting well.
The economy is doing well. As a matter of fact, it's going to do well this year almost certainly, and it will do even better next year. However, we are facing we always face some potential problems. One of them is the dollar has been rising, which makes exports less competitive. We have the Russians clearly getting ready to go to war. and we are cutting defense spending at the same time. And those are, in other words, at any given moment in this recovery, we could tip back in the other direction. The rest of the world has tipped back in the other direction, and if we don't keep the momentum going,
they're all going to fall down.
Well, you know, a year and a
we
half
could
ago,
get pulled down.
Y'all have said on this program that the economy will get better, and sure enough, I've been waiting to call you up, and sure enough, it's gotten better.
Yeah, and
I got to say, you know, y'all were right.
Well, and we also said that there's no danger of inflation when the talking heads on Fox were saying we're going to have hyperinflation, and that's just where we are.
All right. And we did have another caller called in earlier about...
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
And money market... Well, we got Russia, and we got money market funds, and we got...
More commercials
to do. We're kind of tight here.
We're good at juggling cats.
Do you want to do the money market funds?
Sure. There's something called breaking the dollar, which isn't as bad as it sounds. Money markets have traditionally and by regulation had, just like many mutual funds, they have an asset value for per share. And what money markets have been required to do up until this new change is keep each share worth $1.
Mm-hmm.
And that's led to some stress in the money markets, in that there have been times where we've had near panic, because at the end of the day, what is in a money market is a bunch of short-term, very short-term bonds. They're called money market bonds. They're 30 days or less. But when interest rates shift, even those very short-term bonds have a shift in their fluctuation in the value.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be, that has to be covered to make each share worth $1. And what the new regulation is doing is basically saying that there is a little bit of leeway.
And the effort by the SEC is to have money market funds float a few cents one direction or the other. And there's a reason for that. The $1 value in a money market fund is purely artificial.
Yeah.
And it is maintained by the company that runs the money market fund. And it, by feeding money to it or taking money out of it, is necessary. And when it was put in place, money market funds originally did float. The money market is a market. It's short-term overnight money out to about 30 days.
You can lose a little bit of money, and you can gain a little bit of money.
It rises and falls. But a money market mutual fund was set up to be competitive with a bank, where the bank guarantees every dollar is worth a dollar.
Right.
And
that's arbitrary.
Right. What the Federal Reserve and everybody concluded as a result of the panic we had was, it's probably a good idea to let money market funds float a little bit, because when they break, and one of them did, it's going to be catastrophic because people think they're bank accounts.
Right.
So the issue is, if you want a solid, what the SEC is, and the Fed and the Comptroller of the Currency have come up with, is if you want a guaranteed $1 per $1, go to the bank.
Yeah.
If you want to have a money market fund that, where you may get a little higher interest rate short term, then you're going to have to accept the risk a little bit. And the reason we did that is because the FDIC had to step in unannounced and insure all the money market funds, because one of them broke the buck.
Yeah, and when they say break the buck, it means at the end of the day it was 99 cents instead of a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
That's the panic.
Which caused a panic and could have caused a run on the money market system, which could have... By the way, if the money market system has a run on it...
It's the same as a bank run.
It would shut down the American economy.
Yeah.
And so...
Because the money markets are where large corporations go for short-term money. If they're needing to make a payroll, then they do a 30-day loan. And that's what is being used in some of the money markets.
I am in favor of letting them float. And the reason is, they're not FDIC insured anymore. They are not bank accounts. And I'm very much in favor of the fact that the bank should have a bank account and the money markets should have a money market account.
Well, let me say this something here to confuse the issue just slightly more, because finance is not confusing enough.
Okay.
Banks are now issuing money markets.
But those are money market rate accounts.
Some of them. Here's where it gets difficult. The money market rate accounts that are issued, and they say FDIC on it,
mm-hmm.
those aren't what we're talking about. However, you can go to the bank and get a money market that is not a money market rate account. That's
right.
That's not a bank account.
I'm firmly in favor of getting the brokerage and the security sales out of the banks.
I am too. It doesn't make sense. There's enough confusion here when you walk in a door that says FDIC on the door.
Right.
And then you get something that is not FDIC. I don't care how many reams of paper they use to print up to show you that it
right.
isn't FDIC. It's buried in there somewhere.
And
there are too many people that go in and get, I was just told about my wife's 88-year-old grandmother going to the bank to deposit some stuff and move some stuff around and sold a bunch of Exxon stock.
They sold her Exxon stock.
They sold her Exxon stock. And I mean, that makes my ears go so bright red that it just doesn't make any sense. And she goes, oh, oil is good. She's from North Texas. Oil's good. Yeah, they're playing you.
And really, that should be out of the banks. I'm firmly convinced that the securities sales and bank accounts should be separated by law, and they should be clearly delineated and not sold in the same place. It's just that simple. I don't think brokers should sell CDs, and I don't think banks should be able to sell securities that fluctuate with market. And we have commercials, and I...
Still lots of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I do think that probably radio stations should have commercials. So we'll be back on the other side of these with a very few minutes in the first hour of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and Jake McClure. And we have a whopping 5 minutes left in the first hour of the Personal Wealth Coach, and then we have an entire part of a second hour.
Yes, an entire part, just
an
like
entire part.
We have peace in our times,
right.
Peace of this hour and peace of that hour.
You wanted me to talk about Russia.
Da.
From Russia with love.
Da.
Russia wants peace. Peace of Ukraine, peace of Georgia, peace of...
Greece.
Yes. And that ain't over, folks. Another thing that caused the market to run up was the ceasefire agreement that everybody negotiated in the Russian premier personally signed off on, even though he has absolutely no control
right.
and no troops.
Those people are not under my control, but I will sign this paper.
And agreed to, in the agreement, it was pull the heavy weapons out. And he did. He's pulling them out of Russia into Ukraine. There are tanks, artillery, and all that kind of stuff.
And he's using the ceasefire to reinforce the Ukrainian rebels.
Moving into Greater Russia.
Da.
Which used to be called Ukraine. And it's going to crank up again. And
the fact that they continued to fight after the agreement
right.
and caused lots of people to die and people to surrender and people to retreat.
I like Putin's definition of a ceasefire.
Right.
It is, if the fascist NATO Ukrainian army forces that are fighting would just lay down their arms and surrender, we would have a ceasefire.
Right. What he said is, I agree that you ceasefire and I fire on you.
Well, if you lay down all your weapons...
We will have peace.
Lay down all your weapons. And they did, by the way.
Right,
an entire
right.
group of them ceased fire and were promptly overwhelmed by the by the Russian-speaking, all wearing the same uniform, all wearing Russian, all having Russian-issued equipment and training,
yeah.
whose hometowns were in Russia.
Right. This,
troops.
I said this
who
last
were not
week.
Russian, by the
I,
way.
I said this last week, and this is one of those things where people go, are they really? They keep saying they're not supplying them. Well, at the beginning of this whole thing, the Ukrainian rebels had 3 tanks, and they were museum pieces.
Right.
They paraded them around as if they were really important. They now have many hundreds of tanks.
And they're T-80s.
And they are the new ones.
Best that the Russians have and take about a year of training on to operate correctly, and only the Russians have them and only Russian troops have them, except that when they come across the border...
They become volunteers.
They have spots on them that have been painted over.
So the Russian military is voluntarily under orders.
Right. Well, I don't know. There's a whole bunch of people wearing identical uniforms who have Velcro patches on them where they used to have Russian insignia that have had them removed, who are obviously not Russian, despite the fact they were Russians last week, and they turned back into Russians when they crossed the border.
And they're still being paid
In
rubles by the Russian government in the same amount
yearly
that they were before, based on their pay grade and their rank.
But they're only being paid in Russia. They're not being paid in Ukraine.
Right. So it's being direct deposited to their accounts in Russia.
Right.
They're not actually bringing the rubles in cash over to hand over.
So they're not being paid in Ukraine. The Ukrainians are not being paid in Ukraine with whatever the Ukrainians used to use for money.
Right.
So they're not really Russians.
Correct.
I love that. Okay,
anyway. We're about out of time for this hour.
And, yeah, we are about out of time. And folks, again, what can you do about this? Well, you can write your congressman and tell him don't sequester, because if we go to sequester and cut the budget further, we will have to cut the military rather dramatically. And if we cut the military in the face of what the Russians are doing, they will be phenomenally encouraged to keep on doing it. And you say, okay, well, what's the big deal about Ukraine? Well, the big deal is history tells us that if you allow somebody like Putin with a failing economy to keep expanding and grabbing chunks of somebody else's territory to keep his economy going, he doesn't just voluntarily stop because he's got too much territory.
Yeah.
And if the only country in the world capable of standing up to Russia right now happens to be the one we're living in, and if we decide to cut our defense spending dramatically, which, by the way, we did in the 1930s, and thereby encouraged a guy who you may remember named Hitler. Anyway, I don't think it's a good idea.
Anyway, we're out of time. We'll talk to you about how to contact us next hour. You've been listening to The Personal Wealth Coach.
It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.